Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Doghouse Systems at DoghouseSystems.com. I love a good gaming computer, and I got mine at Doghouse Systems, and so should you. Check them out today. That's DoghouseSystems.com.
The World of Warcraft podcast, so you don't have to. This is The Instance.
Hello, everybody. Gather round the fire. I don't know why I'm an Irish pirate, but whatever.
Is that Irish? Wow.
All right. Let's start that.
Tommy, sure. There's Irish. We're both Irish today.
Pull up a log and let's tell a tale.
Yeah.
I was trying to go all RP.
It is Thanksgiving Day. Everyone's favorite. That's actually Black Friday.
It is Black Friday. It's the blackest. Yeah. It's the blackest of days, Terpster. This is the day where we as a people spend too much money on dumb things, and that'll be great for everybody, I suppose, but not me. I'm here recording a podcast with the one, the only, the Terpster, and I'm happy to be doing that.
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled, obviously, and I've spent far too much money today, Scott, on things I do not need.
Yeah.
But, you know, all that alcohol isn't going to drink itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
I noticed that, by
the
way,
to do my bit.
Before we dive in here, I tried to go to, because the gear store, the Blizzard gear store, had a load of sales and good deals and stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, everything I wanted was gone. It was terrible. Yeah. I guess I waited too long, but I don't know what too long was, maybe 30 seconds, but I got into there
it's
to go buy
all
it.
It's been on all week, so that's the thing. It's all week. You know, they've done different stuff each day. And like Warcraft was on like Wednesday, you know, Warcraft Wednesdays. I see what they were doing.
Yeah.
So they did different stuff, like 30% off stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then flash deals, you know, if you want some cute but deadly stuff or things like that. Yeah. I didn't feel like you missed out on anything, Scott.
There were a couple things. All that was left by the time I got in there was like StarCraft 2 wall hanging thing. Some kind of other weird deal for a game no one's playing right now. Like, it was none of the hot stuff. Nothing Overwatchy, nothing Heroesy, nothing Hearthstoney. It was all sold out, so it was down to the dregs. But that's okay. Well, look, I missed out. Everyone else, I hope you got what you wanted, and that Blizzard treated you well.
It's a good thing as well, because obviously Blizzard now, it's like that's like a cleansing fire through a dense forest. And now, with all of those old lines out of stock and gone, it's left room for new life to emerge.
Whoa.
And we can get excited about new merchandise that comes out that we don't need, but we kind of want.
Yeah, like the, I'd like a perfume that comes out in a green mist called Varian's scent, the scent of Varian or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I'd like the taint of Varian. Varian's taint. Yeah. Taint your taint with Varian's taint.
With Varian's
taint.
It's
like,
taint. Yeah. I can see the...
Sniff my nethers. It smells of royalty down there.
I can see the commercials now. Black and white. Very, very ostentatious. I like it. All right. So we're doing a little bit of a special thing since it's a bit of a holiday weekend here in the States. And half the world seems to have shut itself down at least for a day or two. Terps and I thought we'd get together and talk about I wouldn't call this like a straight up hardcore lore episode, but it is lore focused, no. Story focused.
We're gonna dance around probably a lot of spoilers. So heads up, if you want to kind of remain innocent for the end of this expansion and the beginning of the next, maybe don't listen. But at the same time, I don't know how bad it all is.
We don't know how accurate we're going to be because there's
exactly. Yeah. I'm more than likely wrong on everything.
Right.
There are some things we do know. So whoops.
So before we do that, what brought this along in my head was like, after seeing the cinematic specifically, there's a lot going on in there that begs us to start asking questions about characters and their interactions with each other, motivations and where Sylvanas at in terms of her hellbent revenge and her need to finish this job that she's been handed, and Anduin / Manduin and him stepping up to the plate and leading the alliance in a pretty epic way in that self same thing, but also some side players like Gen Greymane seems like revenge boy. Since the death of his king, he seems to I feel like there's more political thread there than we're being shown right now, and there's a lot of
you got to remember with most rulers, they're kind of a product of their small council. Those people around them, the privy council or whatever you want to call them, they advise the king or the monarchy in question. They say, my liege, we should plant more crops, winter's coming, or we should hire some mercenaries, we need to defend our lands. You are a product of the information and advice you get, and so someone like Gen is on Anduin's council. He's counseled by both Gen and what's his face? Prophet Valen. We kind of got almost the sort of the devil and angel on the shoulder. Historically, we've had these two people kind of advising him, either way. But then sometimes what we saw during Legion is actually them kind of leaving him out of discussions, feeling he wasn't ready. And actually that this was a thing that Gen and Velen had to go and do.
Mm.
And then Anduin stepping up and saying like, no, actually, I am the king now, and I realize I'm not the boy I once was. It's important now that I become the king I need to be.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see the development that's going on the Alliance. Obviously, from a cinematic, it's very heroic on both sides. Both sides have great moments, and we know that in theory we pick up right where that cinematic finishes. So I don't know quite how that's going to work in game. Are we going to go to, will we get a quest? We go to, Undercity Lordaeron and then the cinematic plays and then we carry on.
Yeah.
Or do we join it mid battle? We go there and they're already fighting and it'd be interesting to see kind of quite how that happens.
Mm.
But I think the end result is believed to be that the Alliance take the Undercity back, Lordaeron becomes an Alliance area once again, as the Alliance controls the whole of the Eastern Kingdoms, bar Silvermoon to the north.
Right.
And the Horde controls all of Kalimdor, with Teldrassil being burnt down, and obviously already Theramore being gone. The Azir Isles, where the Draenei are, I think will remain as well, in a similar fashion to the Blood Elves up in Silvermoon. But in essence, we have red on the left, blue on the right, and stuck in the middle with you will be these new continents, these new islands of Kol Taras and it's not Zulaman, what's it called?
Trolltown.
So they're the Amari.
Zandalari.
Exactly. There we go. So anyway, a lot of research went into this. So we've got these two warring, where we spill out, and I guess it's almost like staging grounds to attack the other continent. You know, first we need to have these island strongholds secured. We need to secure the help of these powerful navies that exist on these lands, in the hopes of then eradicating the other side, which has kind of long been the goal by various people within the game. You know, we had, you know, obviously the Black Prince in the form of Baratheon wanted one side to win so that they wouldn't have the distraction of the other when they fought back the Legion. Now, the Legion's come and gone, and we now have taken it to kind of be like, well, without a big bad guy to distract us, we've gone back into our petty squabbles. Mm-hmm. So that's quite interesting in that it wasn't that Sylvanas has been corrupted by the Lich King. Anduin's become a warlock and has set fire to everyone. You know, it's very much like, no, it's not a big bad issue. It's the persistent, underlying, constant issue we have in Azeroth, which is xenophobia and racism. You know, we don't like the others. We like our own tribes. We like our own dudes. We don't like those green-colored guys over there, or those blue tentacled-faced guys over there.
Right.
You know, it's very much this this conflict that's always been there, but now has really bubbled to the surface.
Yeah.
And I love, from a gameplay perspective, we're actually going to have a living, breathing, progressing world. You know, Undercity being in the shackles and the hull of Lordaeron, to finally see that reclaimed. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
As to what they do with it, who knows?
Yeah, I'm, you know, really curious about that. Where
build it in and build the city on the top again?
Right.
Are they just going to alliance-ify the Undercity? The Undercity was never a particularly well-designed city. No one goes there and goes, like, oh, blimey, this is conveniently laid out and easy to navigate. You know, it's horrible. And it was at one point even worse. They had, like, even more levels, and it was all split everywhere. But maybe now they've got the skill sets to design a better city. So this is a great way to be like, okay, cool. Let's build another faction hub here. I don't know if they need to, like, in terms of, I don't feel like the Alliance was feeling, we don't have a capital city in that area that would be useful to us.
Well, maybe they just, reclaim quote unquote the upper city, and they just get some roofs on and, you know, clean it up some, and the basement becomes a thing of the past. Like, I don't know. It seems like if you're going to take that thing over and it was primarily a human run joint to begin with, and they bring it back to its former glory, I don't think they want to spend any time down in the sewers. I think they're done with that, you know?
And so then, but I just then raise the question, what's the value for Blizzard, the game designers, to spend the time redeveloping that city? You know, what is its purpose? And maybe its purpose is to flesh out the world, make it feel more living and breathing, to make it something that they can all be proud of. You know, they built the beautiful, I was going to say Shattrath then,
he was
in Legion.
Oh,
Nightfallen.
Suramar.
Suramar, there you go. I can't remember anything today. But they built the beautiful Suramar. It felt like a massive, sprawling, beautiful city. It was great to quest in. It wouldn't necessarily be the best place to go to the auction house in. I imagine kind of you'd have to have, it would turn into a silver moon of quite having, a little bit too big for what it was.
Sure.
But it felt, you know, like a city from the sky. It looked great. I could see them being able to do stuff like that. That would be impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know what will happen there. But anyway, what we're seeing is that, you know, we start off, and before this happens, evidently, so I'm guessing in the pre-patch, Teldrassil is burnt down.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know by whom. Some people theorize it may be forces within the Alliance trying to force the hand of the Alliance as a whole and Anduin.
Yeah, they call that
taking action.
They call that a false flag, potentially. Like the idea being that somebody like Ghen Greymane, somebody within the power structure, would make this happen covertly, and then have it, you know, of course, blame the other side and say, "Well, this is a cause for war. This is now justification for us to do this." And in Ghen's mind, this would be he would be able to justify that level of loss, because overall you'd be able to take back, you know, you'd be able to take back Azeroth as an idea. And it's not a unusual concept in actual, you know, there's historic realism to this. People do this all the time. False flags are a thing, and this, that could be an interesting angle. We have zero idea if that's the case, but it is something people are floating around a lot of. And do you think if that's, let's say that that's true, that forces within the Alliance have made that happen, and will of course have to atone at some point for it, or at least account for it. Do you like the Gengrey main angle?
No, I don't. I mean, for me personally, I think that actually, again, it starts becoming a bit pantomime villain again. Like the justification needs to be that someone's done something past just, this is inevitable. These, you know, when idle warring factions, like, nothing would unite the globe more than if aliens arrived, especially if those aliens wanted to kill us. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, we're like, hey, cool. Okay, well, yeah, I don't mind, you know, Syria, you know, we're going to, you know, we'll worry about this later. You know, we need to concentrate on, you know, I think we can all agree Team Human should be fighting Team Alien right now. We shouldn't be fighting amongst ourselves.
Right.
And I think that that would galvanize people and unify people. Once those aliens are dealt with, you know, I might still be saying to, you know, like, hey, I kind of feel like that bit of land over there in Israel belongs to us. Yeah, how do you feel about, you know, and all of a sudden you slowly slip back into these old ways. So I don't feel like it needs to be some insidious plot. I don't know if it necessarily adds anything to those characters. It makes Gen into a individual, but maybe that works. I like the idea that that there's more fallout in that. I love the idea. Some people think that Verisa Windrunner, who is the widow of Ronin, that she gets killed in that engagement around burning the tree, and that Sylvanas raises her as kind of her sister inside, you know, like to rule alongside her. Mm. Maybe that would be cool in terms of dividing the Windrunner sisters, but having two on one side, maybe that works, maybe it doesn't. With Verisa basically representing void elves in a sense. So Alleria obviously is the void elf,
right,
currently in the game. She's learned how to do that. The void elves that become the playable races that we get to play are apparently high elves, which then is kind of historically has been too small of a faction to ever be considered another racial faction that we could have on the Alliance. They've been in the Alliance, but they've never been playable.
Right.
So Verisa and Alleria are high elves. It was the Blood Elves were originally high elves before Arthas destroyed their city and then turned Silver Moon. They became Blood Elves, the Sindarai, the kind of the fallen elves in search of revenge because of Kel'thas and things like that. So it's a weird kind of mix of those different elves and how they all work. But I kind of like the idea that with the sisters, they can kind of put them on different sides, but there's three of them, so it's tricky.
Yeah.
Currently, we have Sylvanas, obviously, is Horde. She's the leader of the Horde.
Sure.
And then you've got Alleria is not married, I don't think.
Yeah, is their relationship status? What do we call that?
I think the thing is they're so old now in their time. They've spent hundreds of years together. Yeah. They sired a child together, and that's cool. I think they both were very much in love. However, I kind of get the whole, like, I don't know. Alleria feels like she didn't drink the Kool-Aid. Talarian, I think he did.
Yeah.
Like he got very much invested with Zira and the light and became light forged and potentially, I don't know. I don't know if the spark was still there in their partnership.
Sure. I agree with that. I don't know, man, they're a complicated couple in my opinion. And I think they've got a role to play. It's like, you know, they're very tail end of this expansion that we're in right now. Obviously, they were injected late, and I have a feeling that they're going to be. We will have plenty of the thousand year couple in the next expansion. Certainly at the top of it. Yeah, I think that's going to be super interesting. But if you,
I think Tyrellian being, you know, obviously he was the High General of the Alliance. You know, he's not seen in that cinematic. He might be there, but equally he may be kind of seeing himself now above the petty squabbles of the Alliance and the Horde. I don't know. Illyria always hated the Horde. She blamed the Horde for a lot of things, including the loss of her family mm-hmm. and hometown, and she fought them in the Second War, and you know, obviously has learned of a lot of destruction to happen since. So I can see how Tyrellian would be a little bit more resistant to it than Illyria, but still, you know, they are they're a new faction in and of themselves, potentially. But we've got the Lightforged Draenei join the Alliance would kind of indicate that the Army of the Light falls in line behind Prophet Velen and Tyrellian.
Sure.
So we then get the Void Elves joining the Alliance as well. That would make sense in terms of Illyria and Tyrellian both joining the Alliance. Their subsequent sub-factions are part of the Alliance. That's cool. You can kind of get your head around it. Mm. The Horde getting High Mountain Tauren. I mean, that's cool, I guess. It's, you know, if you like antlers, now you can have those instead of horns. you know, it's a subtle difference. But then I guess, you know, Lightforged Draenei have slightly different hairstyles, prettier faces. That's, more customization.
That's
options.
True. Those Taurens are there. There's an attitude tonal thing too. Like it's a different. Like there's a cultural twist that I kind of like. So I'm actually kind of excited about those guys, despite the fact that it's really just their horns. It's really the only difference between them and normal Taurens.
Chiefly, I'm sure there's lots of subtle differences as well. But chiefly, obviously, the reason anyone really wants to play any of them is to get those racial transmog sets.
Yeah.
To be able to be like a. I think even on the High Mountain, I think you get the totems as well. I think you get some totems on your back and stuff like that. So you look very cool and you get like a very cool accessory. But we will see.
Yeah.
And obviously the Nightfall and joining the Horde, that's interesting. So currently in the game, there's a conversation had between Lady Liadrin, the Paladin Blood Elf leader, and, the leader of the Paladins within the Blood Elves, and one of the guys from the Suramar quest chain, one of the Nightfallen. Mm. And they talk a little bit about how the Horde doesn't necessarily seem like the obvious ally for the Blood Elves. And then, Lady Liadrin's like, you know what? The Horde are pretty cool. The Horde are pretty solid. They've always had our back. We like the Horde.
Yeah.
And I can see how, you know, as the Nightfallen now are making their way into the world, coming out from their bubble, they're starting to make that choice, and they've decided to ally alongside the Horde. So, kind of cool.
Yeah, I think. Here's my only twist. Here's my little twist on the story. I like to add my own experience in there as part of canon, because when I was in the city doing quests, I would work extra hard to stay not only in disguise but not be. I avoided conflict, so as few deaths as possible. So I think they remember that. They're like, remember when GURP tread on our land and he was here and he was real careful.
He was honorable.
Yeah, he was honorable. Yeah. And I think that's why they like the Horde. Hey, one quick theory I wanted to get out of the way before we get too far into this. And that is, it just occurred to me. And if I'm right about this, it'll be the greatest thing I was ever right about. What if we need resolution on Illidan. We know that. So what if the resolution on Illidan is, he's like, I'm done. I don't have to do this shit anymore. I can go and just go home and chill and basically retire from being whatever I am. So let's say he does that. This is all hypothetical. He goes in, goes up north, finds is like, the tree. I haven't been to the tree in a long time. This is great. Hey, everybody. And he's hanging around the tree and he's chilling. And then he's one night wakes up in the middle of the night or something and his scars are burning, and they're burning hotter and hotter. And he's like, what, my scars, he says. And what it is, he's got, there's a reaction from the little bit of light taint he got from the chandelier lady. And now he's burnt. Yeah, and it's burning. And it's, oh, no. And he basically immolates and bursts into flame. And it's so big and horrible that it really just burns down the whole joint. And then the Alliance says, all right, this is an opportunity.
That must have been the horde.
Right.
So I love it. No. and that is because we do actually know what happens. Oh, so we're gonna take a step into spoiler territory now.
All right.
And talk about what happens at the end of this expansion.
Oh gosh. All right, this is great. Now everybody listening, just for real, we may be talking about things that you'll see soon, and if you don't want to hear this,
yeah,
I guess go out.
Skip on from now. Yeah. Okay. So basically in Antorus is the engine powered by the Titan soul of Argus, who's called Argus.
Yeah.
And he basically, we fight his avatar, his self, I guess, in a big battle. And we are joined by the souls and avatars of the Pantheon, the original Titan creators of, the originators, I guess, of Azeroth, who helped shape the lands and the mountains and calm our turbulent world from the old god infestation. It gets to a point in the fight where all hope is lost. We are doomed. Sargeras himself descends from the skies. Sargeras stabs Azeroth with his giant sword. And he stabs Azeroth right in the Silithus. Oh, right. Oh, where it hurts.
Ow.
Which, again, is a zone that has had nothing really happen to it, even since Cataclysm. And that is why Azeroth starts bleeding Azurite, which is the currency we use, like artifact power, in the next expansion.
Yeah.
And that is why in the upcoming patch, there's a PvP battlegrounds where we battle over Azurite points and crystalline forms that are coming out of Silithus. Now, Illidan, he basically, with the help of the Titan Pantheon, or the remnants of their souls, he helps trap Sargeras in the seat of the Pantheon, where, for all intents and purposes, he is the jailer of Sargeras. And we'll keep him there for 10,000 years and beyond, in theory, basically until we need him again.
Right.
So his character arc goes from that young, hopeful, fated night elf that was actually imprisoned for 10,000 years for trying to actually save us from the Legion, although we didn't really know it. Is now himself goes from prisoner to jailer of the Legion, of Sargeras.
Yeah.
So we have Sargeras trapped and Illidan, his jailer, the person trapping him. Before we leave the seat of the Pantheon, Illidan gives us some messages. And there are three messages. The first of which is to Malfurion. And it basically says, look, I'm sorry, brother. And Malfurion's like, you were still a bit of a dick. We then give one to Tyrande, and he says, Tyrande, I loved you. Whoops. And she's like, you were still a bit of a dick. And the third one was to us, the hero. And it says, there's more fights to come. You've shown through this campaign that you are capable and that you actually could help save Azeroth and make a difference in the future. Good luck. And that's kind of the last we see of Illidan thus far. Now, he's not dead. He's just trapped in some ethereal plane to stop Sargeras escaping.
Mm.
I'm assuming that he is fully capable of containing Sargeras there with the help of the rest of the Pantheon. It'd be interesting to see as things spin out in the future. But for all intents and purposes, Illidan is the savior. Illidan does fulfill the prophecy in some ways of defeating the Legion, But he is out of action. He is not going to be part of this story going forwards, as we currently understand it.
Right.
Now, obviously, Sargeras could break out of his prison, Illidan comes back, or Illidan comes back and Sargeras has become, you know, it's infested him and he's now the Avatar. Yeah, there's a billion and one things they could do. Just as, I mean, even Illidan being dead wasn't enough to stop Illidan not being used in future stories. But as it stands, Illidan is shelved along with the Burning Legion as a concept. So it'd be interesting to see going forward, you know, what happens with the demon groups we meet. You know, demons will still be out there. The Burning Legion is still going to have people vying for control internally, but without the big bad guy as at the helm,
right.
They've in essence been neutered. Also, by destroying and defeating Anturus and Argus, we significantly damage or maybe forever stop demons being immortal souls that can just return to their bodies.
What do the demon hunters do regardless of what happens to their leader? When they go leaderless, they lose the tip of their spear, really.
They don't really have Illidan as a leader now, in that, you know, of course they serve Lord Illidan. I think they've embedded themselves into the Horde and Alliance and will continue to fight for causes that are motivated by their factions. So I think, you know, it's just accepted that they're now going to enjoy killing the opposing faction rather than themselves searching out bigger, badder common evils.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah, that's interesting to me. Because they're the one. Well, I shouldn't say the one, because technically the Anduin switchover is a huge deal as well. But it just feels like they're the one thing that nobody's talking about. Like Illidan, despite where he may end up, this was a brand new, not faction, but a brand new, class brought into the game, a brand new sort of permanence that was brought to the game, and now they don't have their head. Like everyone else seems to sort of have a head of what they do. They don't seem to have that, and that's odd.
There are some NPCs. There's a guy called Jace. There's a few different demon hunters that will be used as the faction lead. To be honest with you, the faction leaders in some of the kind of accompanying races that aren't the main original factions are a bit weak. You know, if you asked who was the faction leader of the Pandaren, you know, it's two different people. Do you know which one they are? No. You know, they're never really involved in anything. Even like someone like Trade Prince Galliwix, you know, he's not really done anything outside of a few short quests in Nashara. You know, it's a series of weaknesses that over time Blizzard looks to kind of fill in the gaps and make it a little bit more coherent.
Sure. It seems like a major change, but not really, because, you know, they didn't exist before. Now they suddenly do. I mean, they existed before, but they were just sort of a part of the bigger story. Now they're a thing you're playing and being and doing, and how that class moves into the next expansion and beyond is at least kind of interesting to me. Now here's a question that takes us back to Lordaeron for a second. If the Alliance takes it back, and it seems that they are meant to, by all indications, to creating a very red versus blue sort of scenario in the world map, where do the undead go? Where the Forsaken go? Where do they live?
The way they've done it is that up until level 110, the Undercity will still exist. And you will play in Undercity and you will start off in the Eastern Kingdoms as a undead, and you'll play through those lands, and that will be the case. Once you hit 110, you do the Battle for Undercity style quest and you lose the rights to Undercity as an undead. And whoops, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
I think you'll be able to visit Bronze Dragons to return to the phased old world version. Mm-hmm. And this will be the same for Teldrassil as well. So there's in-game mechanics to kind of allow people to skip back and forth if they are over 110. But ultimately, they are imagining that this is a progression thing. They don't really want to be caught up in, now we've got to go back and fix this level 17 quest because we deleted this thing. They're just getting to a point now where they're just like, okay, cool. New phase, new world, evolution. You log in today, something different because time has passed.
Right. Now that I can see that.
So it should be cool.
Yeah.
We then, on the kind of, so returning to Battle for Azeroth.
Yeah.
The Alliance are searching out for the help of the Kul'tirans, they are on Kul'tiras, and that is an island nation ruled over by some, I think it's three, but maybe more, ruling families. And our questing experience there as the Alliance will be kind of winning the favor and uncovering the issues there are. The gameplay that was out of BlizzCon that people would have had a chance to play or maybe see some of the streamers basically involves, it's very much like a New England witch kind of pilgrim, you know, Salem witch trials type world that we're kind of getting into. So in the first kind of questing area that they showed off for the Alliance, it involves kind of solving the riddles behind the curse of the town and defeating some witches. You come across a sausage factory where actually a curse has befallen some of the workers and turned them into pigs. And so there's all new, brand new pig models, and they look great. They look really cool. Some really cool pigs in Warcraft. So I think Chris Robinson said in the instance panel you guys did there that, you know, sometimes they might make a new boar model and then go back and use that to populate other zones that they already had the old models in just to up the fidelity of the game. Yeah. So I look forward to seeing these pigs rolled out.
Across, I like a good pig. A good strong pig game is important.
They look great. Yeah. They look great. And because these pigs are sometimes human that have been turned into pigs, you tell that because they're still wearing some clothing. So they've got like top hats on or glasses and stuff like that. It looks very cool. But the idea there is that one of the ruling family's daughters is thought to be a witch. So you have to save her and help her prove her innocence and then kind of help, you know, rid the Kul'tirans of this kind of disruptive influence that is currently going through them. The Zandalari even have a slightly different issue at hand. They are under siege by blood trolls and lots of other things going on. Their island contains a Titan facility that will be the first raid. And that's where we're going to learn a lot more, I think, about where the expansion is going, because I hope that Titan facilities mean Titan prisons, and that normally means old gods. And so hopefully we can find out about, I don't know, N'Zoth, or maybe a new old god. Maybe there's information we never had. But that would then progress us on. We do know that we're going to fight Queen Ashara during this expansion as well. So she's a servant of N'Zoth. Maybe she is the end boss, or maybe it's going to be something else. But holy moly, it's exciting to explore those things.
Yeah, I am very excited about that as well. Do we have any idea if there's any, this is a dumb question, any lore or story behind the idea that some of the orcs can stand up straight now? If they so choose.
I don't know. I think, again, obviously, because the hope is they introduce like the Frostwolf clan or something like that as a horde faction, a sub-race, because who wouldn't want to play as a cool, kick-ass, brown, uncorrupted orc? That'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got upright orcs, then why can't the green guys stand up as well? So in the lore, the idea was is that part of the fell corruption caused them to kind of hunch over. Visually, obviously, they look really cool and hulking. Yeah. You know, they've got so many muscles that they're just hunched over from, you know, the size and weight of their mass. But yeah, both because the Zandalari trolls are joining the board, so they're allowing the Senjin trolls to also then be upright as the Zandalari trolls look. So you'll be able to switch in the barbershop or something to that effect.
Oh, I didn't know the trolls were also getting that option, eh? Had no
yeah,
idea.
Basically, yeah, they're going to unhunch the trolls and orcs if you choose to. And I love that because it adds more variety in the stances. I mean, when you see Thrall is an upright orc. He doesn't hunch over in his new models and stuff. So that's cool. And it's because they wanted to have the proud, majestic green orc kicking ass. And why not? I don't believe there's any going to be any lore reason for it. I personally would love it. They put in some goblin chiropractors, maybe with some very frightening looking kind of bladed machinery. And you're like, really? Okay. Because, they should be able to make some money out of this as well.
I agree. I completely agree. And also, I was kind of hoping for a little bit of troll on troll hate. Zandalari's going, we can stand up tall, and the rest of you are like, primitives, like, well done, we've evolved to a greater stance. I was hoping for some of that, and so I didn't realize.
I'm sure there will be.
Yeah,
just in general, I think, just amongst players, and some people want the purity of being the hunched over original troll. This is the silhouette I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm about. I'm super chill man, and just, hanging back, just lounging out. Whereas the Zandalari might be a little bit more sort of, historically they've been the a-holes we've been killing a lot in like Throne of Thunder and other sort of
even
troll things.
We did some vanilla stuff where we had to kill them a lot.
They were around. I don't know if the Zandalari were actually around in Zul'Gurub. I think that was other troll factions.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them out there. I think that Zandalari were pretty absent from a lot of it, but maybe not.
Who did we kill?
Maybe they were there.
When I was in, what's the name of the damn place?
Ulamun?
No, Old Zone, bunch of questy stuff. I found Henry there. I forgot the name of the damn place. It's just dirty with trolls.
Stranglethorn?
Yeah, Stranglethorn Vale. Tons and tons of trolls. Those were I don't know who they were aligned with, but I always thought they were part of the Zandalari thing. But
they might be. I'm trying to think because you repped up with the Zandalari with the Bijus from Zul'Gurub.
Yeah,
but I think it was like the Zandalari Empire or something like that, and it was like a lot of different trolls, and they were just heading it up. But I'm not too sure top of my head, but I'm sure they were cool guys and. They were legit.
Yeah.
They were too legit to quit.
Yeah. Now they're full. Now they're full on Horde buddies. So that'd be good. And for the record, Garrosh Hellscream, before his ultimate demise, when he wasn't in some sort of battle stance and ready to fight, which was quite often, but when he was just sort of standing there, he's pretty straight up stand up orc in terms of his posture. I know this is a small thing, but something to notice.
No, that sounds about right.
All right. So, we're about at the tail end of this. So what we know about the end of this expansion, moving into the next one, so 7.35, I guess, is a little bit. There's a lot of unknown still. They've been pretty good about keeping that stuff to themselves. A lot of that hasn't been data mined. A lot of it, none of it was really talked about at the event. They didn't talk about this intervening content at all. Are there any big surprises you foresee? Like, for example, we do see Jaina a little bit in the introductory in-game trailery thing that they showed. We hear some voiceover from her where she's sort of coming to terms with the fact that though she's been a peacenik tree lover, tree hugger her whole life, she's now come to the conclusion after, Theramore and all the other stuff she's experienced that we gotta fight. We gotta do this.
I think she's an older, more mature lady. She's lived through a lot. She's not as naive as she once was. And I think just as you take anyone who's been in an active war zone or seen atrocities committed, you lose faith in whatever hope and you held before. So she believed always throughout her life that the Alliance and Horde could see eye to eye and live in harmony. you know, she saw Thrall and she saw the Horde under him, and she believed that they weren't the devils that she was brought up to believe that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then Garrosh went and dropped a bomb and killed everyone that she ever knew and loved. And that is, that's going to change you. She's then gone through a lot in war crimes and ties of war and stuff like that. She's kind of learned to forgive in part, but she's not necessarily been that friendly in game. So in the kind of external novels, she was kind of getting over the issues that she once had around the Horde. In the game, she's like, nope, no Horde in Dalaran. Okay, the Horde are going to be in Dalaran? Well, I'm not going to be in Dalaran then. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
And she's decided to kind of remove herself from that scenario. I don't think that she would be instrumental in starting the war against the Horde, but I think she's very much ready to fight. And even more so, the question is whether or not she feels abandoned by the Alliance. You know, have we let her down as well? Is she going to be kind of third faction something else, or will she take on the racial leader of the Kul-Tirans? You know, they're currently led by her, I think it's her mother.
Yeah.
So maybe her mother dies in this process and she steps up to become the racial leader for the Kul-Tirans. And so that's cool. That gives her a seat at the table with Anduin.
Yeah.
You know, it allows her, she kind of always had one, but she's there with the merits of, you know, she's leading the Navy, the island's strengths. So that could be cool.
Yeah.
I think the time of peaceful Jaina is gone. I hope the time of angsty, angry Jaina has gone. And now we just get a more sort of mature, decided, doesn't really care what you think about her, Jaina. You know, she knows what is right, or what she believes is right.
Yeah.
And that's what's important to her, I think, would be cool.
Yeah, Jaina with resolve is a thing I could get into. She's even, it's funny, even this version of her with the white, you know, shock in her hair and her sort of angry thing has made its way into Heroes of the Storm now. She's that's a skin over there. A number of skins look like that. So she's evolving. She's changing. I'm very curious about that. But I think gone are the rumors that this expansion, I mean, it still could, by the end of the expansion, who knows? But this next expansion, because Jaina was the key art at BlizzCon, she's the focus. She's going to be the big baddie, or she's going to, you know, fall from grace or be turned into a thing or whatever. I think some of that stuff has dissipated because, you know, clearly the focus of this expansion isn't necessarily on some weird corruption again.
It doesn't seem to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be. And that's good.
Yeah. We've done a lot of that. And I'm not saying they can't return to that. I mean, it's a fun part of fantasy. Fantasy tropes are coded in, hey, something was corrupted. It used to be good, but now it's not. This city was once a glorious thing. Now it's a hellhole. Or this person, you know, it's all King, what's his name from Lord of the Rings, the Rohan guy. It's that idea. Yeah. It's that idea, but, you know, Blizzard does it in real fun ways, lots of characters. But I do think they've played that card a lot. It'd be nice to see something else. So here's one. Okay, final prediction. End of this expansion, or at some point in the course of it, Sylvanas, does she remain Banshee Queen, head of the Horde, or does something very disruptive happen here where she is out of there? Because I can't see them doing that to Anduin. It just feels wrong that Anduin.
I think the issue is we've gone from Thrall to Garrosh to Vol'jin to Sylvanas, and meanwhile on the Alliance they've had no one, King Verin Rhyn, Anduin Rhyn.
Yeah.
And so technically it's kind of the Alliance's turn, but I think that the Horde being led by non-orc, I don't think it fits for me. And it's not to say, you know, anything on the other factions and races within the Horde. I just think, for me, I would love to see Thrall return and or someone like Cao Fang step up.
He was showcased nicely in the trailer.
He was featured very heavily. Again, it's one of those things, it's like, he's not wearing tier one warrior gear. It's like, well, no, they've updated it. It looks cool. He's wearing like his own thing. I think, but the thing, Sao Fang technically is quite old, but he's always been an absolute badass within the Horde and the Alliance. You know, his cleave was a thing of legend. Alliance players, you know, if they were going to take on Thrall, they'd make sure they didn't mess with Sao Fang. Because we could, as a raid, take down Thrall. His cleave would just go through a whole raid. The guy was an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
So I would like to see Sao Fang as the next war chief.
Yeah.
I think that would work. He's a grizzled veteran of many battles. He's lived a lot. He was a voice of reason to Garrosh in Northrend, albeit wasn't necessarily heeded. I think it would be brilliant to have him be more front and center. However, it may just be that Sao Fang becomes the Orcish racial leader. Thrall, you know, is a great character, but we have kind of moved on beyond him now. It would be nice to have more of his story, though, because last we left, he was kind of just a bit...
He's just a freaking hippie now. I mean, he came back for 5 seconds to kill Garrosh with a giant fist, and then he's just hanging out. Like, where is he? He's in the Nexus.
The criticism Thrall always used to get is that he was the Mary Sue character. He was Metzen writing himself into the game and making him, now Thrall saves everyone. Everyone loves Thrall. Thrall's the best. And then Thrall, he could get Jaina, but he doesn't want Jaina, no. He can go for whoever he wants. It'd be interesting to see, obviously, with Metzen having stepped away from the company, if that means that it's just, it's less likely to have Thrall, or actually more so if, he's not doing anything else. He is recording VO stuff for Thrall in other games. Maybe it's worth using him more for the for Warcraft. Who knows?
Interesting point. I hadn't thought about. I mean, I knew that there was always this Mary Sue thing going on with Thrall, or the people had said that in the past, but I'd never really thought about Thrall's contributions and evolutions in the game matching up with Metzen. People always talk about, Cataclysm hit when Metzen was being divorced, and Pandaria hit when he married Kat. And wow, look at the tonal difference, like his life would be reflected in the game. And I hadn't really thought about this, but Thrall sort of receded into the background right around the time Titan fell apart and kind of, went into himself a little bit. And based on the interview I had with him, that kind of, that tracks.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he's sort of been not involved at all since around the time he retired. I wonder if that's intentional on their part. I mean, to sort of keep him where he is.
It may just be a reflection of reality. It may not be. I think, I remember chatting to Metzen after playing Wings of Liberty and just being like, holy crap, man. Are you Jim Rayner? He was like, brother, you have no idea. It's like, a lot of those kind of issues around Kerrigan and Jim and life and stuff. I think that Metzen, as all great writers and storytellers, puts a lot of themselves into their stories. That's where they draw their inspirations from, their own experiences, their own lives.
Right.
And so I think that obviously now we've got Alex Afrasiabi heading up Warcraft. He's been doing a fantastic job. He works, very closely with Chris over the years. But I think equally he's going to want to stretch his wings and kind of, strut his creative muscles. Kind of having Illidan imprison Sargeras, who has been the bad guy for the history of Warcraft, really, once it kind of was given some strong foundation of lore by Metzen, Afrasiabi's like, okay, so we're going to put Metzen in this box over here, and now we start the new chapter. We start the Afrasiabi world.
Yeah.
And, we've got the Void Lords, the even greater bad guys. It will be interesting to see. I think, obviously, there's lots of people who work on it. It's not fair just to put it all on one person, be it Metzen or Afrasiabi in any respective time within the game.
Right.
But I think from a simplistic way of looking at things, you can definitely see some parallels between who's making the game and what's happening in the game.
A lot of people are very happy with the direction it's been going. This last expansion was seemed to be evidence of that. and also just a good, how do I put this? The, like, story people, they've always had to do this at Blizzard. Story people and technical people, meaning gameplay side and story side, have always had to work together. But it seemed to work real well in Legion. Like, Legion was a strong binding of those two factions, if they want to call them factions, in the company.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that they that leading forward, that that's going to continue. And when I saw Metzen briefly on the show floor at BlizzCon a couple of weeks ago, while he was walking around sort of incognito, he said something to the effect that my children...
Well, Kat put up a picture of them, and I didn't spot Chris. Like, I was, you know, I saw her, you know, I saw the kids. I was like, oh, cool, they're playing some Overwatch. Yeah. And I didn't even recognize the guy with the flat cap on and a big beard. I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
That's Metzen.
If he bends his head over, you couldn't tell it was him. And we made that weird because when we got pictures, it was more head on and a bunch of people saw us doing that. And then there was a bit of a, you know, a little throng that showed up. But anyway, he mentioned something about how it's all in good hands now. Like, he's really proud of where all of these things have ended up. Like, the Overwatch stuff, he was blown away by the Reinhardt stuff. And, you know, these are things he hasn't had a hand in because it's been that long. And it didn't seem like he felt like, I mean, what's he going to say? It's not like he's going to say, hey, they're taking this in the wrong direction. But it does seem to be, and I believe him, that he's really happy with where people are taking it. Like, the stuff is being well handled, and you know, he'd be the first to tell you this was never just me. This was like some of my ideas and then fleshed out to huge extents by teams of hundreds of smart people and artists and conceptual people and people who changed my mind. And, you know, like, he's always been very humble about that, but it is nice to see that it seems like all of those original concepts, all of those characters that we've grown with and changed and seen or whatever, have been, you know, handed down to people who care. And that's good. Again, you know, it's a company, they're making money, but within that structure, there are people who are passionate about these things. And we are too. We're excited about it. We don't know what this expansion's ultimate goals are going to be lore wise, but we thought it'd be fun to hang out with everybody a little bit and talk about it. Are you as excited forever for what the future may hold for the game?
Oh yeah. In this regard? Without a doubt. I mean, it's going to be a solid expansion. I think it's tricky to kind of, it's almost got that sort of Cataclysm-esque kind of feel about it for me, in that it doesn't feel like we're not going anywhere dramatically new.
Right.
In that we are going to these new islands, and I think I need to play them and see them and experience them for myself, certainly. But it doesn't feel like Pandaria did, in terms of, you know, like it's a whole, you know, shrouded world. But I guess it's kind of like Cataclysm and Pandaria in one. I would like to know where we're going, I guess, who we're going to kill, what's the big bad.
Yeah.
You know, that is Warcraft. That's World of Warcraft. We have to fight. You know, it's not, you know, why do we fight? It's what is worth fighting for. I want to know what we're fighting for. Mm. You know, is it for the Alliance to win? Will the Horde win? Are we going to fight to a stalemate? Are we going to fight to a peace? I don't want it to be futile.
Right.
I want to feel like it's all worth something. And so I guess at the moment there's so many questions because we don't know. And we have to discover that, I guess, through the course of the expansion. You know, is it worthwhile?
And when I always go back to that Warcraft 3 cinematic where the orc and the human are just out in the field fighting. And at the end they see from the sky the infernals
raining down.
Yeah, the infernals start dropping like flies, and they're left with just a couple of hands floating in the water. And you and it feels like no matter what happens here, no matter how much animosity there is between each other, there will come a point like that again where you have to go, oh, something bigger is at play, and everyone's survival is at stake. And I just can't imagine the game doesn't do that again. It always ends up doing that, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing that can make these conflicts feel a little bit pointless.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you put this into our world, you know, we all unite to take down a big bad guy. We have a relatively, you know, successful period of peace. But then people start getting antsy again.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is just a sad reality of human life.
Yeah.
That we, you know, we're doomed to be warring against someone and have conflict with someone at some point. So, yeah, who knows?
That's probably why it resonates. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening today. Thank you guys very much. I hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving weekend, those in the States. If you don't live here, you're probably just having a normal weekend. I'm excited for you as well.
I had turkey still. It was lovely.
Oh, lovely. That's good. If you want to contact us, theinstance@gmail.com is our email address. You can also just visit the website, theinstance.net. All the links and information and stuff can be found right there. Follow Terpster at @_T. Follow me at Scott Johnson. I think it's going to do it. Terpster, have a fantastic week, and may all your givings thank be you. Thanked as well.
Thank you. No, thank you.
Yeah. And
thank you.
May all Theramore corpses forever be covered in mana. We'll see you guys next Aww. Time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.